Morning. Today's Daf in Baba Basra is Chav Tes. Yesterday we started the third perek of Baba Basra, Perek Cheska Sabatim. We're talking about Kinyan Chazaka. As I mentioned yesterday, we're going to make a very sharp distinction between Kinyan Chazaka over here in the third perek of Baba Basra and that of the Gemara in Kedushin. And Mishnah Kedushin talks about Kinyan Chazaka in terms of the acquisition of property as a formal mechanism of creating a Kinyan. In other words, you are interested in buying property, so there are three methods in terms of how you're going to buy that property. Either you're going to give money, or you're going to write up a contract, or you're going to do a Maisa Chazaka, you're going to do an action, which is a proprietary act, demonstrating clearly that you are the owner of that property. In our perek of Cheska Sabatim, we're talking about squatter. You're going to be sitting on a property, you're going to be there for 3 years, and then you are going to become an owner by being on that property for 3 years. It's going to be working regarding any type of properties with houses, property with fields, and also even those things that have property like halachas, meaning an eved. So the Mishnah told us that once you are on the property or with the eved for 3 years and it's gone unchallenged, so you are going to become the owner. As we discussed yesterday very briefly, there also is a requirement of a taina, which is something we're going to be discussing over the course of the third perek, that you have to also give a plausible explanation in terms of why you are the owner, even though we all know that there was a previous owner. You have to have some sort of taina, but with that in mind, with a taina, you are going to become the owner if you have been with it for 3 years, gone unchallenged. We did the mission yesterday, the beginning of yesterday's daf, where the Mishnah outlined for us that it's got to be 3 years. There seems to be a debate in the Mishnah between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shmuel whether it has to be three full years. The Tanakhama's position, it has to be three full years. The wording of the Tanakhama, as we saw yesterday, was Shalosh Shanim Miyom Liyom, 3 years, three full years. Whereas according to Rabbi Shmuel, not necessarily. It's going to be three seasons, and exactly how does the season work out? So that was a machlokas of the Mishnah between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shmuel has it as being 3 months of 1 year, a full year in the middle for year number two, and then 3 months in year number three, so making for a total of 18 months. Rabbi Akiva only has 1 month in year one, 1 month in year three, and so a full year number two, so it comes out to 14 months, and we are going to later on, at a later point in time in this perek, analyze the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, and seek to understand that. Okay. The Gemara yesterday asks a very simple question. Where is all this coming from? How do I know that if I live on a property for 3 years and it's gone unchecked and unchallenged, how do I know that I become the owner? Where is this coming from? There's no psukim in the Torah that seems to that indicate this. There's no one in the Torah that talks about squatters' rights, and it's more than squatters' rights. It's squatters' ability to create an ownership. Where's all this coming from? So the Gemara in yesterday's daf made an attempt to explain that all this is based on a shura muad, where that we know that when an animal gores the first, second, and third time, the animal is considered shura tam. On the fourth time that this same animal gores, now it's considered shura muad. So you see that the animal undergoes a status change. So what the Gemara wanted to do yesterday was basically take the halachas of the conversion of shura tam to shura muad, the indication that once you have three, so you've now gone through a status change. So same thing over here. When you go 3 years on a land and it's unchallenged, so now the land has gone through a status change. It goes from the Marakama to you. The Marakama was the original owner. Now you're the owner, and the Gemara attempted to learn this based on the halachas of Shur HaMuad. And the halach, and the idea of Chazaka regarding Shur HaMuad. Okay. And it was difficult. The Gemara yesterday noticed that there were a number of stumbling blocks in terms of getting from point A to point B, getting from Chazaka of Shur HaMuad to the Chazaka of Cheska Sabatim. And the Gemara basically sidestepped. Step, meaning Gemara said, yeah, it's a little bit tricky, and the comparison is not perfect, but it's good. At least that's what the Gemara argued as of yesterday. The last point that we saw yesterday was, you know, when it comes to the macham, when it comes to the challenge, so in the Shur HaMuad, so you have to tell the owner directly. You have to tell the owner, hey, your animal has gored once, twice, three times. And that's a pasuk in the Torah, v'huad b'va'alav, that you have to let him know that his animal was acting crazy. And if you don't, in other words, if you don't directly tell him, and even if he indirectly hears about it, so the animal does not shift from being a Shur Tam to Shur HaMuad. However, in the case of Cheskas Abatim, when he challenges, he doesn't have to challenge directly to the squatter. Even an indirect challenge is going to be sufficient. Machashel Abafanav is going to be a valid challenge. So why is there a discrepancy? So the Gemara said yesterday that when it comes to Baba Kama, when it comes to Nizakin, so the Torah says V'huad Bavalav. You have to let him know directly. Rashi explained yesterday that he's going to become more liable. So for increased liability, you have to let him know directly. Mashenkin over here, where we're talking about the original owner simply challenging his rightful ownership of the property, it doesn't have to be direct. And the reason why it doesn't have to be direct, as the Gemara itself said yesterday, is because we assume that once he makes a challenge, and even though he didn't say it directly to the squatter, but chaver dechaver islay, chaver dechaver islay, your friend has friends, friends have friends, meaning word gets around, and you know that your challenge is eventually going to make it around to the squatter. So therefore, he should be on the alert that the original owner is making a protest. Okay. This is what we saw yesterday. We have a little bit more to go. And Ula Rab Meir. So we are in Chavches Amud Beis. We are a little less than halfway down on the Amud. And the Gemara is still now knocking its head against this idea that the idea of Gimel Shanim for Cheskas Abatim comes from the Shura Muad. So the Gemara says, Ula Rab Meir. Now let's consider the opinion of Rab Meir. Da'amar, Richeg Negichosav Chayv Kirv Negichosav Lakol Shekain. So Rab Meir says the following. What if the animal, we're back in Shura Muad. What if the animal gores not on three consecutive days, but three times in one day? So Rav Meir makes the following argument. It's a kavachomer. And the kavachomer is very simple. If the animal gores on three consecutive days, the animal goes from being a short time to a Shura Muad. If it gores on three times in one day, kol shekain, how much more so? That is Shitas Rav Meir. And so that means that according to Rav Meir, so you don't need an interval of time. You just simply need three occasions in order to create a chazakah from the animal going to short time to short muad. So now what does that mean according to Reb Meir? If we are deducing the halachas of cheskas abatim, gimel shanim for cheskas abatim, from the halachas of short muad, and I don't need intervals of time, I just simply need how many occurrences, so the Gemara says, achla tasa peri b'chad yuma kigon te'ina lehave chazakah. So the Gemara's question is very simple. So if we subscribe to a Meir Shita, so that means that, hey, look, watch me. I'm going to eat one fruit. Good. I'm going to eat my second fruit. Now I'm going to eat my third fruit. So if by Shura Muad, the animal now has gone from being short time to Shura Muad, because it's not a question of interval of time, it's just a question of occurrences. So here too, I'm now eating on three occasions. And therefore, that should create the chazaka of cheskas abatim. So the Gemara says, "Dumi d'shura amud, mashura amud beina diislei hanigicha leisala hanigicha hachanami beina diisala haypera leisala haypera." So the Gemara deflects, and the Gemara says, "Well, they really that's not a good comparison because even though according to Rav Meir, three negichos, one after another, even on the same day, would create a shur hamuad. But let's consider." That the second negicha is after the first negicha. Meaning, there can obviously be no overlap between negicha number one and negicha number two. And of course there's no overlap. Because really what we're doing is looking for a pattern of behavior. And if the animal gores once, so now the next time it gores, obviously one is over, and two now is a new goring. And when it gores the third time, so here it is goring on the third time, two is obviously over. But you see, in the case of the fruit, it's not a fair comparison. Because when I'm eating fruit number two, fruit number two was there when fruit number one was there. Meaning, in order to create a pattern, I need it to be totally separate instances. And so the fruit comparison, me eating the fruit of the field, cannot be compared to even Rav Meir Shita of goring number one, goring number two, to goring number three. So the Gemara says, okay, achla talase pere kigon tzlaf lehave chazaka. So the Gemara says, well, if you want it so that when I eat fruit number two, fruit number one didn't exist, and when I eat fruit number three, fruit number two didn't exist, so The Gemara says, well, why don't we pick on the tzlaf fruit? Now, if you remember brachos, which goes back a long time ago now, in terms of daf yomi, so you remember the Gemara in the sixth parak of brachos spent a lot of time describing the tzlaf fruit. Now, in terms of what it's described of, I think we defined it as a caper bush, but even if I'm right, I don't know what the caper bush is, so again, I'm just asking for forgiveness. I don't know. The idea is that it's a funny kind of fruit. The Gemara in Brachos, if I remember correctly, said that there were three different parts of the fruit that can be consumed, that can be eaten, and perhaps different brachos for each part of the fruit. Anyway, for our purposes right now, all we need to know about the tzlaf is what Rashi tells us over here. It's a prish lo nikar bo hayom v'nigbar l'sof gimel shanim. In other words, it's a kind of fruit where today, it may not necessarily be edible, but leave it on the tree 3 days from now, and it will become edible. So, the Gemara says, say, if we're looking at the tzlaf, so basically now we can create something comparable to the three negichos of the animal. Again, in the three negichos of an animal, I need it so that when negicha number two is happening, negicha number one is over, meaning it's finished. Here, by the tzlaf, so I can have a fruit which 3 days ago was not edible, and now it is edible. So it's kind of comparable, and basically now I can, with the tzlaf fruit, eating on three occasions, obviously much quicker than 3 years. I mean, we could do all this in 9 days, and have something similar to negicha, according to Rav Meir. And if that's true, so then we are going to be considerably shorter than the three-year requirement of our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, okay, but still, it's not really comparable. Because even though the fruit is not edible until 3 days from now, but it's there, meaning again, it's not comparable to the negicha, because by the negichos, when the animal's involved in its second goring, the fourth goring is done, it's complete, that's history. So once again, it's not really a good comparison. So the Gemara says, "Achla tlasa per betlasa yume kigon aspasta lehave chazaka." So the Gemara says, "Now what about aspasta? Now aspasta is another kind of grain. It's generally speaking given to the animals. So and basically it goes in 30-day cycles." Right, Rashi again writes, "Lesof lamayom who nigmar va'okra nosof v'zorin acher bimkamo v'sof shloshim goes as an osof shalosh panim." So it's possible that basically with a recycling of 30 days, so I can have aspasta, I can have this kind of animal feed where I'm going to be able to consume this three times within a very short period of time. So hechidami dekadech va'akla dekadech va'akla. So the Gemara says, so basically, aren't we now looking, aren't we basically looking now at something very similar to the three negichos of the animal? So the Gemara says, Hasa mishamin hu deka shamid va'achel. So the Gemara says, okay, but again over there, it is not absolutely similar to the negichos of the animal. In that, over there, even by the animal feed, the animal kind of lops off a little bit at the top of it, but there still is some of it still that's there. Again, if we want something similar to the negichos of an animal, I need to consume the fruit, gone, consume it again, gone, consume it again. So the Gemara says, "Achla talse per betlasa yarche kigon aspasa lehave chazaka." So the Gemara says, "Okay, so let's just simply push it out now to 3 months, meaning I'll eat the feed, the animal will eat the feed. It only takes 1 month to grow the feed from start to finish. So the animal will eat the feed, gone, eat it again a second month, gone, eat it again a third month, gone. Now in 3 months' time, we basically have something similar to the three negichos of Reb Meir. So the Gemara says, Man hoche usha Rabbi Shmuel. So the Gemara says, okay, who are the hoche usha? Meaning, remember, yesterday we talked about who gave us this comparison? So if you remember the beginning of the Gemara quoted Rav Yochanan, who heard this from Hochei Usha, from the travelers of Usha. Now, we already explained yesterday, the travelers of Usha were based in exile after the destruction of the Second Temple, went from station to station, from city to city, and after Karen B'Yavne, after Yavne, they went to Usha. So, which Tana is that? Man Hochi Usha? So the Gemara says, Hochi Usha is none other than Rabbi Shmuel. So it's Rabbi Shmuel. Now, what do we know about Rabbi Shmuel in the context of Cheska Sabatim? Le Rabbi Shmuel, Hachanami did none. Rabbi Shmuel, Amr, Ba Medvar, Mamurm, Bistei Alavan, Ava Bistei Ilan, Kanasis Tvuasu, Masa Gedzesa, Vakanasif Kaitso, Hare Elu, Gimel, Shanim. We happen to know from yesterday's Mishnah that according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's not 3 years, meaning it's three occasions. As long as you are harvesting it three times and you're doing so with three different crops, so we know that according to Rabbi Shmuel, that creates a chazakah. So the truth of the matter is that if this explanation of the comparison of Cheska Sabatim to Shura Muad is in fact a correct comparison, and you're subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shmuel, which is it doesn't have to be 3 years, it just has to be three occasions, so therefore we're really good. Within the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel, this comparison would in fact be a fair comparison. So where do we stand at this point in time? And this is really the end of yesterday's daf.
Why does that make the aspasta?
Because the aspasta takes a full month to grow.
But it's the same
crop. The Gemara is assuming no. The Gemara, within 1 month, it's the same crop. Mm-hmm. But the Gemara says that in the three-month cycle, it's going to be three totally separate crops. That's the assumption of the Gemara. So where do we stand right now in terms of approach number one? How do I know about Cheskas Gimel Shanim? So approach number one of the Gemara, and this is Rav Yochanan quoting the Rabbanon of Usha, Mehoche Usha, which we just identified as Rabbi Shmuel, is that really the base model of Cheskas Gimel Shanim is based on Shura Muad. And just like by Shura Muad, the animal after gores three times now changes status, so too when you're sitting on the land and working the land three unchallenged years, so it's going to create a de facto change of status. All this only works if you subscribe to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shmuel, which brings us now to today's daf, Ula Rabbanan. So we are four lines now from the bottom of the Amud An, Chavches Amud Beis, as we're approaching now today's daf, and we are now going to give approach number two. And approach number two basically is as follows. Ula Rabbanan, my, what are we going to say now according to the Chachamim? Now when we say the Chachamim, we mean the Chachamim of our Mishnah. Meaning, according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah, who don't subscribe to this rule of Rabbi Shmuel, who don't say that you just simply pick three different fruits at three different occasions and you're going to create a Cheska Sabate, but rather, or a Cheska Sasada, but rather you need three full and complete years. How do they derive this halacha? Where is it all coming from? So, Amar of Yosef, so this is now approach number two, and that is Kroksiv. It's a pasuk. Now, as I mentioned already, it's not going to be a pasuk in the Chumash, and the Torah doesn't mention this whatsoever. So what we're really doing is we're going to be teasing it out of a pasuk from Yirmiyahu. Now, Yirmiyahu is experiencing Churban Beis HaMikdash. He sees the destruction of the first temple. He writes about it in Sefer Yirmiyahu. He also writes about it in Echa as well. We learned just a short couple weeks ago on the sugyas in Baba Basra regarding authorship, that he, Yirmiyahu, was responsible for writing Sifro, his own Sefer, and also Echa. So he's...
What does the pasuk says, Mitmoil Shilshon?
We didn't see the pasuk yet. Just one second.
He had the pasuk before by Shora
Murit. Yeah.
What is
Mitmoil Shilshon? Come to me. We'll discuss it after. Let's move on in the Gemara. So the Gemara says so Yirmiyahu and Navi sees Chorban Beis HaMikdash, and we are now in the Pesukim in Yirmiyahu in Perek Lamed Beis, describing Yirmiyahu as basically we're getting to the end. This is during Melech Tzidkiyahu. So this is really the end of Bais Rishon, and he's basically telling the Jewish people, so now as I'm forecasting doom destruction, so I got the following advice for everybody: buy property. Okay, now is the time. Now is the time to buy property. Now, of course, it's counterintuitive, and that's pretty much the point. Meaning, despite the fact that we are about to experience destruction, but I'm telling everybody to buy property. It's a nechama. It's basically going to tell us that even though we are going to be losing the land, but it's going to come back to us. So buy property. And the pasuk says as follows. Now we're reading the pasukim in Yirmiyahu. Sadas bekesef yiknu. Buy up property. Vekasub is safer. Write documentation. Write a bill of sale. Vechasom, have it signed. And now, that's right now just a short excerpt of Sefer Yirmiyahu. Now, here comes the context. Sharei Navi Omid Be'aser Amazi Olach Adasrei. We are now in the 10th year of Tzidkiyahu's rule. And now we know that we have 2 years remaining. We have year number 10, year number 11. And so basically he's saying is that we need documentation. And what's the diuk? The diuk is that had there been 3 years, we wouldn't need documentation. Because we have what we are now learning about, Kenyan Chazaka. Look at the last Rashi on the, second to last Rashi, I should say, on the page. Rashi writes, Sharei Navi Omid Be'aser Amazi Olach Adasrei, Yirmiyahu Bishnas Asiris Tzidkiyahu. So Yirmiyahu, at this point in time, was in the 10th year of King Tzidkiyahu, V'yaya Kala Bechatzer, HaMatara Kedichsib B'Sefer Yirmiyahu, V'sham Ner Merlo, Hineh Chanamah Ben Shalom, V'ksib Bahi Inyana. Now, in that very context, it's written, Sadas because of Yikna, because of a Sefer. Hayamazir Loche Sadas Lichto Shtaros. He was telling everybody to write documentation. Ula Amid Eidim Chasim Asam. And make sure to have witnesses regarding the bill of sale. Ki Yigolam and Ayir Bishana Achasasrei. Because he's forecasting that we're going to be exiled at the end of the next year, meaning so you only have 2 years. Kishin Nilkada Ayir. Velo Yachziku Bemekach Shalashanim. And therefore we're not going to be sitting on the land for 3 years. Ela Asiris Vachanis. The only years that we're going to be sitting on this property is going to be year number 10 and year number 11, meaning only 2 years. Alma. So again, the inference now is behani tarti shnei lo have chazaka mikan lechazaka she'en pchusa mishal shanim. So 2 years doesn't create a chazaka, but 3 years would. So really, it's a tease, meaning it's really just teasing it out of the psukim. It's certainly not explicit in the psukim, but it's the idea that because he knew that there was only going to be 2 years, therefore he was motivating, incentivizing everybody to write up a document. Had it been 3 years, he wouldn't have been so meticulous about the document.
It's not explicit in the psukim. Why not 4 years? Why not 5 years? I mean, where is it that it's not like 3 years?
Well, only because we know the context. I know, I understand. It's only because we know the context was there were only 2 years remaining. Okay, look, the Gemara is going to challenge this. I mean, this is not an obviously, this is not an ironclad proof, but the Gemara is trying to find a source. Okay, so Abaye says, Dilma also made Satova Kamashmalan. It could just very well be that when Yirmiyahu was giving the advice, he was just giving good financial advice. Dilo Temaachi, and the Gemara says, and I'll tell you the truth. If you don't say this, we're now on the top of Chavtes Amad Aleph. Dilo Temaachi, Banu Batim Veshev Avinatu Ganos Vachlus Perio. Just keep reading on in the Psukim. I mean, it's a different parak, but clearly, Yirmiyahu was the one who would give just simply good financial advice. Build houses, plant your vineyard, eat the fruit. Meaning, these aren't halachic statements. This is just simply, he's encouraging the people, look, I know destruction is imminent, but build houses, plant vineyards, meaning, I'm just giving you good, sound financial advice.
In Golos, they should buy.
Yeah?
In exile, they should buy the houses.
Yeah. Correct. Rashi says on the top. So in other words, so he gives advice. So my kamar eitz tova kamashmalan hachanami eitz tova kamashmalan. He's just giving good advice. It's not necessarily a halachic consideration that because it's not 3 years, because it's only 2 years, so therefore you have to write up documentation and make sure you have witnesses. It's not. It's not a halachic consideration. It's just good advice. Teda dechziv nasata mechli cheres laman yamdu yamim rabim. And again, if we go back to Perek Lamed Beis in Yirmiyahu, he says, and what should you now do with your documentation or your bill of sale? So put it in an earthenware jug, seal it tight. It's going to last for a long time. So again, is that a halachic consideration? No, it's just good, sound financial advice. So the Gemara says, Ella. So the Gemara says, fine. So the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu is not necessarily now going to be the source of Cheskas Gimel Shanim. So where do we stand right now in the Gemara? As we're about to approach the, I would say, the pretty much the accepted approach to Gimel Shanim, Cheskas Gimel Shanim. So far we made a comparison between Cheskas Gimel Shanim and Shura Muad. That was basically yesterday's daf, Chav Ches. We had just a quick passing fancy, so to say, with a pasuk in Yirmiyahu that may indicate that there's something called Cheskas Gimel Shanim, although the Gemara pretty much quickly dispensed with that, in that it's not, he wasn't saying something halachic, he was saying something rather that was good advice, hashkafa. And now finally, the Ela Merava, we are on Chav Tes Amin Aleph, we're about 5 lines from the top of the Amud, and here now the Gemara is going to work its way with its pretty much accepted approach. Before we start with the Gemara over here, just one word on the daf, but not connected to what we're learning right now. You'll probably notice over here that there is a break in Rashi. In fact, just look at the bolded words. So we haven't gotten there yet in the Gemara, but now is just a good time to make mention of it. Ad kan perish Rashi is atzal mikan ve'elach perish Rabbeinu Shmuel bar Rab Meir. So this is the end of Rashi's pshat, and from this point going forward, so we're going to be learning the pshat of Rav Shmuel ben Rav Meir. So just a quick a couple points over here. First of all, on the side of the Gemara, bitfus pizru hanusach kan meis Rashi. So there's another edition of the Gemara where it says this is where Rashi dies, meaning that Rashi was working on his commentary to Gemara, and it's at this point in time he died. Now one could conjecture. Okay, it's just conjecture, but one could conjecture that there was a pshat that Rashi had on Baba Basra, but it wasn't finally edited. And so it didn't go through, you know, the various maduras, the various editions, and it could be that Rashi just simply didn't have an edited version, and this is and that's what's happening over here. Not as dramatic as what I just read over here, that Rashi died exactly at this point in time. Anyway, who is Rav Shmuel ben Rav Meir? I'm sure we all know this, but I'll just mention it, you know, just to, you know, to cover everything. Not everything, but Rav Shmuel ben Rav Meir is the grandson of Rashi. Rashi had daughters. We know for sure he had two. May have had a third daughter as well. But Rashi had daughters. So one of his daughters married Rav Meir. And the daughter that married Rav Meir produced three of the Balei HaTosfos. Meaning the first son was Rav Shmuel ben Rav Meir, known better to us as his acronym, the Rashbam. The next one was Rav Yitzchak Rav Meir, and the third one was Rav Yaakov Rav Meir. The second one, Rav Yitzchak Rav Meir, so we know him by his acronym, the Rivam, comes up every now and then within the Balei HaTosfos. And the third of the grandsons is Rav Yaakov Rav Meir. Well, if we called him the Rivam, we'd be confused between him and number two. And he knows now he's much better known for his nickname. His nickname was Rabbeinu Tam. Right, Yaakov Ishtam. So Yaakov was referred to as Yaakov Avinu was referred to as a Ishtam. Simple, right, straightforward. Whatever adjective you want to describe it as. So Rav Yaakov, the third of the children of Rav Meir, was known as Rabbeinu Tam. Right, obviously popular and extraordinarily influential of the Balei HaTosfos. Rav Shmuel learned with his grandfather. We know that for sure. Rav Shmuel writes in his parish to Chumash. He also wrote a parish to Chumash. And in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, so you look over there, and he takes a little bit of time. It's interesting. I don't know why he doesn't write in the beginning of his commentary to Chumash. He waits to Parshas Vayeshev, whatever. But if you look in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, so he writes a little bit of autobiography over there, and he talks about how he learned with his grandfather. Yeah, I highly encourage you to look at it inside. He basically writes, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it in front of me right now, but he basically writes that I'm really working on Pshuto Shel Mikra, I'm working on the simple Pshat in the Torah. I know my grandfather said he was doing it, but I'm telling you that I'm doing it, and I'm doing it in a way that it's more Pshuto Shel Mikra than my grandfather. And he writes, and again, I'm paraphrasing, you should look it up yourself, and he writes that my grandfather looked at my Pshat and said to me that if I had more time in my life, I'd write a Pshat much more similar to yours. He writes in his autobiographical sketch in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. In the meantime, however, he is going to be taking over from this point going forward in the Masechta. There's a lot more Masechta coming up, and so most of the Masechta is going to be commented by the Rashbam. You don't have to have read the Rashbam to realize his style of writing is significantly different than his grandfather. If you just flip through the upcoming pages of Baba Basra, you will realize that he takes a lot of real estate of the page. The reason why he takes up so much real estate is because his style is significantly different than his grandfather. His grandfather wrote succinctly. It is that which typifies Rashi, is that he is both clear and succinct. The Rashbam is clear but not succinct. He writes a lot. That's just simply his style. So these pages that are coming up are going to be significantly shorter in terms of the actual Gemara itself, because the Rashbam really is meticulous in terms of how he comments on the Gemara. Okay. Good. Let's go on. So we are back in the Gemara now, and we are starting Ella Mi'ata. I'm sorry. Ella Merava. So we are now up to the third approach of the Gemara in terms of how we know Cheskas Abatim, that the Cheskas Gimel Shanim, that if you occupy land for 3 years, the land is going to be yours. So Ella Amar Rava, Shasak Amaisa Machel Inish Tarte Machel Tlasla Machel. So we're going to make the following argument, says Rava. The first year, a person sees somebody living on his land, not only living on his land, working the land. So he's mochel, okay? What is it? It's just my property. And the second year he'll be mochel, but for the third year he won't be mochel. And by virtue of the fact that now you have gone 3 years on that land unchecked, we generally assume that people won't be mochel for three consecutive years. So therefore, it must have been that the land now belongs to you. So Amale Abai Amale Atza. So Abai says this can't be the ripe shot, because Kihadra Ara Tiadalabar Mipere. So now let's say after year number two, where the original owner, the Marakama, finally said, okay, enough. This is ridiculous. Right? Give me back my land. Which he's entitled to say after year number two. So if the issue is Mechila, so then he should get back his land, but he shouldn't get any of the fruit back. But meanwhile, Alama Amar Rav Nachman, Hadra Arav Hadra Peire. Rav Nachman makes a statement, and apparently this is absolutely accepted because the Gemara says it without any pushback whatsoever. Rav Nachman says that when you get back your land, meaning the land didn't go through 3 years of chazaka, it went through 1 year, went through 2 years. When you get back the land, you also are going to get a reimbursement of all the fruit that was taken as well. Which means then that this can't all be a function of mechila. If this was all a function of mechila, so you get back the land, but you're not going to get back the fruit, so it can't be a function of mechila. So Elam Rava. So the Gemara says, okay. So Rava is basically going to give another version of the same basic idea, but the operative issue now is going to change. It's no longer going to be mechila. What is it going to be? Let's see inside. El amarava shasta kamaisa lo kapid inchi, tarte lo kapid, klas kapid. So he describes this as being a function of hakpada. Meaning, for year number one, okay, not that he's mochel, but okay, well, I'll go a year without being on my property. I got other properties. I got a lot more things going on right now. Your person's just not makbid. And in year number two, again, we'll say the same thing, is not makbid. 3 years, a person is not going to not be makbid. Forgiveness for all the negatives. But in other words, for 3 years, if somebody's living on your land, you're going to say something. And basically, it's an umdana. It's an approximation of human behavior. That if somebody's on your land for 3 years and you said nothing, it's because the land belongs to him, not to you. So the Gemara says it's a function of Akpada. So Amalei Abba Lamata Kigon Handa Be Bar Liyashiv. So the Gemara says, now, Abaye once again challenges this idea that all this is a function of Hakpada. You know, if we're talking about human behavior, there are various people out there who just happen to be a little bit more particular than others. Like, for example, the family of Bar Liyashiv. Dekapti afil aman dechalva mitzvah didhu. Somebody steps foot on their property, and they come out with the shotguns. Okay, now I understand the Gemara doesn't describe shotguns over here, but you get the basic idea. They are very makpid. So hachinami de la alta havi chazaka. Now, because it's so makpid, let's say you went on what seems to be their land, and you lived on their land for an hour, for a day. Okay, let's even say a week. And they didn't say anything. So you're telling me now that if all this is a function of Hakpada, and we know that they're super makpid, and they haven't said anything yet, so now you become the default owner immediately? Because they didn't say anything? So the Gemara says, V'chite ma'achanami, and maybe you'll tell me, well, maybe that's right. Well, the Gemara says, Imkin asatat v'rech l'shiurim. Well, the Gemara says, now all this now becomes a subjective measurement. And the whole point of the Gemara is an explanation of the Mishnah of an objective measurement of 3 years. And the Mishnah says miyom liyom. It has to be 3 years calendaric, meaning from the day that you occupy the land, 3 years from there, mark your calendar, and we're talking about an objective shear. And if all this is based on akpada and human behavior, well, not everyone behaves the same. Now, parenthetically, by the way, at this point in time, I think it's fair to ask, and the Rishonim do ask this, it's fair to ask, well, we're looking at normative human behavior, meaning the family of Eliyashiv is... And they're outliers. They're abnormal. So, and sometimes the Gemara says, "Baladaita eitzel kol adam," meaning, okay, they're more makpid, but that doesn't necessarily, it doesn't reflect normative behavior. Now, the Gemara doesn't ask that question because, well, I don't know why, but and the Rishonim are bothered by this. But in the meantime, Rava is now going to basically take us through his third version now of how all this works. Elam Rava Shasa Kamaisa Mizdari Nish Bishdari Tarte Vitlas Mizdar Tfe Lo Mizdahir. Year number one plus year number two plus year number three, people are careful about documentation. Now, I know I told you this already yesterday in my introduction to the Perek, but this is it. Meaning that when you buy a property, so yes, there's going to be a bill of sale. And yes, there's going to be documentation. And you're expected to hold on to it for years one, two, and three. But after that point in time, basically, it's understood that you're not going to hold on to this documentation forever. Parenthetically, by the way, after we learned earlier this morning that Yirmiyah told the people, you know, make sure to put it in your safety, you know, in a safe deposit box. So, but again, we're talking about quote-unquote normative behavior. And normative behavior is such where a person is not expected to hold on to documentation for any more than 3 years. And as a result of that, if after 3 years have come and gone, and nobody challenged your occupation of that land, so therefore, you now, somebody comes for year number four, says, hey, wait 1 second, I'm the owner. And you say, what do you mean you're the owner? We've gone now, I've been sitting on this land for this is my fourth year here. And what do you want now? Documentation? You can't expect me to hold on to the documentation for anything longer than 3 years.
It seems like Rava is not, bottom line, it's not bringing any source from.
That's right.
It's just saying.
That's right.
Bottom line, we don't have any source. For 3 years.
Right. In other words, correct. Meaning what's happening now in the Gemara is that the Gemara was... You see what happened in the Gemara. The Gemara looked at the Chazak of Shuramua. The Gemara looked at the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Meaning the Gemara wanted a source.
Right.
And
your behavior...
But in other words, basically... perhaps the best way to say it, perhaps, is that this is a din de rabbanan, it's a takana de rabbanan, and the takana de rabbanan is based on normative human behavior. Okay. So, amalei abai elamiata machash lo bafanav lo tavim macha. And the Gemara now is going to ask a question, which quite frankly we already asked yesterday, and we know what the answer is going to be. And that is, okay, now a protest or challenge does not have to be done in front of the occupier. Meaning, if the original owner of the Marakama made a macha, if he challenged it, As long as he's done it formally, even if he didn't do it directly in the face of the occupier, that's going to be a challenge. Now, why should that be? Now, can the occupier make the following seemingly legitimate claim? Hey, wait 1 second. If you would have came to me and you would have challenged me right in my face, so then I would have known, oh boy, I better be careful. I better hold on to the shtar, I better hold on to the title for a longer period of time. Can't he say that? And by virtue of the fact that he wasn't directly challenged, so now can't he say, well, I don't know, I didn't know I needed to be extra careful. So the Gemara says, no, da'amalei chavrcha chavr islay, v'chavr de'chavrcha chavr islay. So the Gemara makes a statement, second day in a row now we're hearing the statement, and that is no. That as long as the Marakama, the original owner, issued a formal challenge, and even though it wasn't directly to the occupier, but we assume that word gets around. And as long as he said it formally, and by formally I mean in front of other people, so we're going to assume now that word got back to the occupier, which means basically he was issued a challenge. And basically be on alert that the original owner thinks that the land belongs to him. So if in fact you have documentation, you're going to be holding it on to a long period of time. No?
This is within the first 3 years.
Yes, correct. Correct. After 3 years, the macha doesn't mean anything. Okay, Amar Rav Huna. Okay, Adkan. All right, so basically now that is the first sugya of the third parak of Baba Basra. How do I know about Gimel Cheskes Gimel Shanim? So your three approaches are Shor HaMuad, Psukim in Yirmiyahu, or Rava's explanation of the of human behavior in terms of people holding on to documentation. Amar Rav Huna, Shaloshanim Sha'amru Hu Sha'achlam Ritzufas. So Rav Huna now makes a statement of halacha, and that is that in order for you to have Cheskes Gemoshanim, you must have 3 consecutive years. The Gemara says, I need Rav Huna for that. I have our Mishnah. So, Maika Mashlan Tanina Cheskasim Shaloshanim Yom Liyom. What about our Mishnah? The Mishnah says it clearly. 3 years, day to day. What did Rav Huna introduce over here? So the Gemara says, no, if all I had the Mishnah, maybe the Mishnah was coming to tell me the following. 3 years means 3 complete years. Yom Liyom just simply tells me that they have to be calendarically a full year. Let's assume a lunar year, right? In other words, in halacha, we are going to be assuming a lunar year. So on an average lunar year, that's 254 days. Sorry, 354 days. So the but in other words, but I might have thought mikutaos. I maybe you can shortchange some of those years. The Mishnah says no, 3 full years. But if all I had was a Mishnah, I would have thought they don't have to be consecutive. It could be year 1, 2 to take a break from working the land, and then year 4. And that would have been good. And along comes Rav Huna to teach us, no, they have to be 3 consecutive years. Ritzufos, Kamash Malan. I'm Rav Chama Omod, Rav Huna Basra, Demuvre Bage. So Rav Chama teaches us the following. I know Rav Huna just said they have to be 3 consecutive years, but here's where I think he would agree they don't have to be consecutive. Let's say Minag HaMakom is to let the years go fallow. Meaning, first of all, we know we have a mitzvah in the Torah that we are legislated by the Torah to let the years go fallow on year number 7. Now, Gzeres HaKasuv, meaning before giving any kind of rational explanation, we do so because the Torah says we do so. However, on top of that, why does the Torah tell us to do so? So, the Rambam writes this. It's the Torah wants the lands to be strengthened. I'm not saying, just to be clear, that that's the reason why the Torah says so, but in other words, Tama Mikra, meaning like the Chinuch does every time and again. And so now we're talking about outside of Eretz Yisrael where Cheskes Gemoshanim also works. So let's say that the minhag of the farmers is to let the land go fallow on a certain schedule. So here I think, says Rav Chama, that even of course Rav Huna would agree that if everyone else is letting their lands go fallow and you do so, you do so as well. So then you don't need 3 consecutive years of working the land. Meaning we'll have year 1, 2 where you work the land. Year 3, everyone else is laying it fallow, you're doing so as well. And then year 4, you're going to come and work the land. You can now claim Cheskes Gemoshanim. The Rashbam here writes that even if this was in fact so, you don't get to count that fallow year. Meaning the only years that are going to apply towards your Cheskes Gemoshanim is going to be the 3 years that you worked it. So in other words, even here, you're still going to need the 4 years because you can't count that fallow year. So the Gemara says, Pshita. The Gemara says, now this statement to Rav Chama actually is obvious. If everyone else is laying the land, is allowing the land to lay fallow, so you're just following what everyone else is doing, and you shouldn't get hurt as a result of that. So the Gemara says, "Lo tzricha deika de muvar, deika de lo muvar." So Gemara says, "Well, let's add a little bit of a chiddush over here. Not everyone lets their land lay fallow. Some do and some don't. V'hai gavra muvra." And so now this occupier, and I'm only calling him an occupier just simply to identify him as being the one who's going to make the king in Gemoshanim. So this occupier, so he makes the executive decision, I'm going to let the land lay fallow. Even though not everyone else does. So maybe over here, the Marakama, the original owner, can come to him and say, look, you know your ownership of the land was tenuous. You know that, meaning you're now year number 3, and you made the decision not to work the land. That's curious, isn't it? Meaning, if you really wanted to demonstrate your ownership, shouldn't you have worked that land in year number 3? And yet, you made the executive decision to let it lay fallow. So, can't I now make the argument as the Marakama? Can I make the argument? You really should have worked that land, and by virtue of the fact you didn't, really calls into question your ownership of the land. Kamash Malan da Amarle. So now we have a Chiddush. And the Chiddush goes like this. Da Amarle, where now the occupier can say to the Marakama, Chad Ara Bekule Bag Alam Matina Linter. So he says, look, what did you want from me? Meaning, I wasn't planning on working any of my other lands, and now you wanted me to work this land, and that would require me to hire Shomrim just for this one land. It's not financially beneficial for me. Inami, or another very simple argument, Bahachini Khalidav de Tfei. No, it's a smart move on my part to let the land lay fallow, because next year the land is going to work even better. So, no. So the argument of the Marakama could have been, again, that's the Havamina. The Havamina is that the argument of the Marakama is curious that you didn't work the land in year number three. The Maskana of the Gemara is, no, the occupier / second owner can say, no, this was a financially prudent decision that I just made.
There's no issue with this guy creating his own Yerushimita in a way and Baltosif.
But again, let's assume, I hear you, it's not Baltosif if you want to add another year of not working the land, and also could be outside of Eretz Yisrael where there's no Shemitah. Okay, Tanan. Cheskas Abatim. So the Gemara is now going to have the following discussion. So again, let's focus on Rav Huna, because really, this is all still a spin-off of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says that in order for your Cheskas Gemoshanim to work, it has to be consecutive. What Rav Huna really is saying, meaning if we just follow this through, is that for Cheskas Gemoshanim to work, there has to be an establishment of your presence for three consecutive years, meaning as a presence, an ever felt presence on that land. Now, what point am I driving at? So it really, I'm previewing the next Gemara. Tanan cheskes abatim. Now we're not, this doesn't only work with land and plowing and planting a land. It works with housing as well. Meaning, as long as you establish that you were there in a house for 3 years, so this works for housing as well. Now, v'habatim debi amama yada belayla lo yada. Now the Gemara asks the following question. So for a house, look, for a land, and again, I'm saying over the Gemara like the Rashbam. For a land, when do you expect it to be on the land? When is your presence needed there? During the day, not during the night. No, nobody's out on the land, working the land at night. So in other words, presence, even according to Rav Huna, just simply means daytime, not nighttime. But that's for a field. Now let's move this over to a house. What is presence in terms of a house? You live in a house both day and night. So how are you establishing presence at night? Do people know that you're there at night? Now, people can assume you were there at night, but who cares about assumption? We have to have knowledge that you were there at night. So the Gemara wants to know, according to Rav Huna, how is that knowledge created? So v'habatim debi yama yada b'layla lo yada amar b'ayim man ma'asid abatim shiva v'shiva ma'adi yada b'yamama uv'layla. So the Gemara gives one approach, and that is Abaye. And Abaye says, well, no, your neighbors, your nosy neighbors. Now, I don't really mean that in a pejorative way. But I do mean it, however, in that, according to Abaye, they know. They know you're there during the day. They know you're there at night. So one approach of the Gemara is that even according to Rav Huna, who requires a constant presence, and by housing that means both day and night, your neighbors know. Rava Amar Kigon Dasu Beitreva Amar Anan Agrina Mine Vidarina Beitlashnim Biyoma Valaila. Now Rava gives a different explanation, and that is, who will know positively that house is, that you have a presence in the house day and night? The answer, says Rava, is renters. Meaning, if not only are you occupying that house for 3 years, but you also rent it out during those 3 years. So the people renting it from you, so they're going to have knowledge. Now, the reason why they're going to have knowledge is because they're actually living there both day and night for 3 years. So Amale Rav Yemale Rav Ashi Hanin Nogim Beidusen Hain. Then that's funny witnesses. And when I say funny, I don't mean that like from a comedy standpoint. Meaning, they can't be witnesses for you. They are no gebeidus. They obviously have a vested interest over here. De ilo amri hachi aminalu zilo havule agar beiselahai. So, because if you're not the owner, so then who did they just pay the rent to? A total stranger. Who do they need to pay the rent to? the Marikama, the original owner. So obviously they have a vested interest over here that you're the owner, because they don't want to have to pay the rent again.
But you're not the owner until after the 3 years.
Right, right. So,
what after?
Now, it really begs the question, which is that after the 3 years, isn't your ownership now going to be proven retroactive to the beginning of the 3 years? Again, one of those, right? One of those core questions in terms of how all this works.
You're an owner during the 3 years, just right. That it becomes established as an owner.
Right. I mean, David came over to me after the daf yesterday and says, "How is all this working?" Meaning that's really, that's the core question of this entire discussion. Okay. So the Gemara says, you know, the law judges, you know, this is how they're going to judge. Meaning, it could very well be that they didn't pay anybody yet. They're holding the rent money in their hand, and they're just simply saying, look, here's what we know. We rented it from him, meaning not the Marakama, not the original owner, but the current occupier. Okay. Again, all this is working within the opinion of Rav Huna, where Rav Huna says that presence means there has to be a constant presence. When it comes to a field and working the field, so constant means day, because nobody's in the field at night. When it comes to houses, it has to be constant presence both day and night. Question, how do you create that knowledge that you were there day and night? Abai and Rava both give their suggestions. Amar Marzutra. The Rashbam says Marzutra actually is a departure from Rav Huna. Marzutra is of the opinion that there doesn't have to be this kind of knowledge that you were there on a constant basis. There just has to be a basic understanding that you were there. But it doesn't have to be like Rav Huna, constant presence day and night, or field every day, a house day and night. No. Marzutra is much more relaxed, so to say, in terms of how we're establishing knowledge and presence. Amar Zutra V'itan, Amar Leisu Trei Sahade. Leisu Trei Sahade, Lasu De Le, Hader Be Tlash Nibi Yama V'layla, Tani Se Taina. If I have a Taina, a claim made by the original owner, by the Marakama, and he says, I need witnesses that you were there all the time, so then he's going to have to provide witnesses there that he was there all the time. Meaning, again, going down to the Rashbam, it's the last Rashbam on the Amud. So the Rashbam says, but without the Taina, just simply a basic idea that you were there for 3 years is really all you need. I'll read the words of the Rashbam, right? Milsaban peinafshu de pshita leila marzutra de afagav de bal kohana chamarai lael kinal shaman ritzufos. The previous amoraim said that you need to have 3 years of constant presence consecutive. Afila achim echavenes amachzik lahavi edim sheyida beferish al kol hayamim baalelos. Marzutra doesn't require you to have witnesses that you were there every single day and night. Ela yeidu stam sheru dar gimel shanim. All I need is just witnesses to say that, yeah, I know that he was there for the last 3 years. Umistama im dar babayis apelelos dar. And if he was there during the day, so it's a fair assumption that he was there at night as well. The kamar marzucha di itain ma'arer v'amar aisi sahade tanaso taina. It's only when the Marakama makes a claim and says, I demand proof that you were there for the last 3 years on a constant basis, then and only then does Marzucha say that you need to bring evidence. But outside of that, simple, basic testimony that you were there for 3 years is all you need.
So what happens when you oil a leg?
You have to go to Yerushalayim. Okay, fine. I hear. Okay. Umode Marzutra. We're now on the top of Chavtes Amid Beis. Umode Marzutra Berochlin HaMachzirin Ba'ayaras Da'afagav Delotan Tanin and Lay. Now, let's say that the owner of the house, the Marakama, was somebody who was constantly on travel. Right? He's peddling. He's away all the time. So the Gemara says, so under those circumstances, Basin normally will not take a side, but over here we understand that he's away very often, and then somebody could be occupying his house, somebody could be occupying his field. So even according to Marzutra, what we'll do for the Marakama over there is we'll advocate on his behalf, meaning that we'll say to him, hey, you know what you should say? You should say that bring proof that you were there on a constant basis. Taninle Anan. Umo de Rav Huna. Now, on the other side, Rav Huna, now remember, Rav Huna was the one who said that you need witnesses that you were there all the time, day and night, or on the field on a daily basis. So umod ravuna bechanusa de mechuza de liyamama avide lailo lo avide. Let's say we're not talking about residential housing, but let's say we're talking about storefront. In the case of storefront, so all you need is just simply evidence, edus, that you were there during the day, not at night. Okay. So basically, where do we stand right now in the Gemara? So here's where we're at. Okay. Finished up the sugya of the source of Shanim, Cheskes Gimel Shanim. So either it comes from Shura Muad, or it comes from Pesukim Yirmiyahu, or as the Gemara has concluded, it comes from an understanding of the human condition and human behavior in terms of what expectations are between a buyer, between a seller and a buyer. And Rava's approach, the final approach of today's daf, is that it really comes to how to understand general human behavior, in that a person is expected to hold on to documentation for 3 years. After 3 years, he's not expected to hold on anymore. And therefore, if there was a protest made by the Marakama, a macha, even though it wasn't directly done to the occupier, but he made a macha, so that basically puts the second person, the occupier, on notice. And therefore, under those circumstances, he's expected to hold this documentation longer. But if there's no machah, so then he's not expected to hold it any longer. And what we also discussed today, in the second half of today's daf, is the machlokas between Rav Huna and Mar Zutra in terms of how do we create knowledge that you were there for 3 years. The basic position is that of Rav Huna is that we need edus that you were there Yomam Valaila day and night, or at least in a field, you were there every day, and you need that kind of testimony and that kind of knowledge, that kind of edus. Whereas according to Mar Zutra, no. Mar Zutra says that you just simply need a basic understanding that you were there for the last 3 years, but not Yomam Valaila. And the Gemara then says that Mar Zutra would capitulate to Rav Huna under certain circumstances. Rav Huna would capitulate to Mar Zutra under certain circumstances. Tomorrow we start with the story of the brothers and the Shifcha.